Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm Mike Renato.
We've fired Jason, apparently. No. Mike is joining us for this episode as well. We're not going to talk about a bunch of gear stuff. We're actually going to talk about, I wrote a book called Lowest Score Wins. There's one section in there called Pro Tips. And so we're going to just talk. Mike has no idea what's coming up, except he read the book maybe years ago. The first tip, adjusting for wind. Too many people, we wrote in the book, say that, oh, it's a one club wind, it's a two club wind, whatever. Your wedges go a different distance based on the wind than your four iron. Also, into the wind and downwind play very different distances, right? It's not a one club wind downwind and a one club wind into the wind, right? They're very different.
Very true, first of all. And I've got a drone that's got a wind gauge on it that as soon as I get the opportunity, I'm going to add to that and talk about how the wind changes at different heights. Because you've got that gradual gradient of not only the different clubs like you're talking about, but also it gets higher if you're a low ball hitter naturally or a medium and high ball hitter. You're going to have wildly different effects on just your stock shot.
Well, and I think, you know, I know just personally, like I'm actually terrible at just judging how hard is the wind even blowing, like even at my just face level, let alone, like you just said, Mike, you know, the different elevations, it's blowing at different speeds. I'm not good at that at all.
I took a long distance shooting course a few years back, and I need to go back.
You'd be a sniper.
Yeah. I had shoulder surgery and I couldn't do anything golf related. So I was like,
yeah,
okay, how can I learn golf skills without doing golf? And that was just
love that
military. Military had a lot of a big budget, let's say, to learn this stuff.
Yeah.
But he was talking about you could judge the wind by how much of grass was moving and how much the leaves were moving and all that. And I need to go back and look at my notes because there, but again, that's all kind
that's
of
interesting
down low. Yeah.
That's interesting though.
It was interesting.
We wrote that rather than think at the base level, rather than think about it as a one club wind or a two club wind, to think of it as a percentage, a 10% wind would affect obviously a wedge a little bit differently than it would affect a three iron. But also then you need to adjust that to account for the fact that like Ping and TrackMan have done studies where into the wind can be 2.5 times the effect of downwind. If you hit a 280 yard driver into the wind, it might go 240 and downwind it goes 296.
Right.
You know, something like that. So there's a big difference in how much, depending on whether you have a quartering wind or downwind or into the wind and stuff. So just understanding that kind of stuff can lead to a big effect. And I've seen charts that some players will have in their pocket to say, okay, 10 miles an hour is this much into the wind, this much downwind, et cetera. And so you might want to start thinking about some of those things.
Well, and I know, you know, I'm in Ohio right now. It's not been a very great spring here. And it's been a brutally windy spring for us in Ohio. So like guys are out playing golf right now. They better try to understand what that wind's going to do to their ball.
Yep. The next one we have is when do you leave the flagstick in? So when do you recommend people leave the flagstick in? It's now allowed under the rules.
I actually took and tested this when that rule just came out with one of our tour players, and we tested it for, I don't know if we played 18 holes and we did it multiple putts on those holes in multiple days. And we came away with, for him, it was best to pull it out everywhere. What we found, and this was, and some other guys have told us this as well, is if the flag's in, let's say it's 10 feet out and you've got a 10 footer and you leave the flag in, no matter how much break there was, they started to aim at the flag. So they were hitting him too firm and under reading putts because the flag was in there.
Yeah, so that's a different reason than I thought that we might go, but that's a good reason. And
that's it. That's very interesting.
I told my college players oftentimes on a long putt to leave it in for the, we can get to the physics of the ball stopping and closer to the hole and all that stuff, but it helped their depth perception. If you have a 60-foot putt, just having the flag in can help your depth perception about where the hole is and how far away it is from you. That's more of the psychological stuff, kind of like what you're talking about with where you aim. My general advice for average golfers is if you know you're controlling the speed of your putt to within plus or minus 3 feet of the hole, it's not going to roll out very fast. It's not going to be moving very fast. The flag stick can only hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it's going to help you sometimes, like, but a ball that's rolling 3 feet past the hole or 2 feet past the hole can go in the side of the hole without barely touching the flag and still go in. And so it doesn't even need the flagstick to help you. But if you might hit the ball 6 feet past the hole or 5 feet past the hole because you have a 40-foot putt or something, leave the flagstick in because it'll help you more than it hurts you. If your ball is going 5 feet past the hole, it might go in or at least hit the flagstick and stop 6 inches away. Okay, and for most average golfers, that distance where they can't control the distance to within plus or minus 4 feet is as short as 25 feet or so. So inside of 25 feet, take it out, unless you have like a slick downhill putt or something like that where it could serve as a backstop or something. Outside of 25 feet, leave it in for most players. Tour players out to 30, 35, 40 feet sometimes. But even them, their distance control is plus or minus 7.5% roughly. Mm-hmm. So when you get out to 50 feet, they're outside of that 3 foot range.
The depth perception thing really rings true to me because since that rule came out, I've been forced to wear bifocals, been playing bifocals, which there's no depth perception at a certain point. So that having that flagstick there is a big help for me. Absolutely.
You know, Eric, you watch a lot of college golf with Natalie, your daughter, playing. Do you see college players leaving it in a bunch anymore? Are they taking it out? Like, what do you see when you go out and watch?
There are some players that, even like tour players, because Adam Scott left it in for a long time. Mm-hmm. Some players like to have it in almost all the time. Some players kind of go with the flow a little bit. You know, if they're 20 feet away and the other person's 25 feet away and it would be too slow to, you know, whatever. So they'll do that. And far fewer than used to be. When chipping from off the green, you almost never see people take it out when they're hitting chips anymore. I don't know if that's because they've learned that it can actually help them a bit. I actually had a rule on my college team that if you were off the green, the flag stayed in because I had a lot of people tell me how often, because better players are around the hole a lot more often, but you're chipping, so you're not controlling your speed a ton. You know, if they're chipping from 25 yards away, the flag stick stayed in because they were not controlling their distance well enough to not let it help, plus the distance perception thing. To move on to the next one, play 3 whole rounds. That was what we recommended because you can set an achievable goal to play. I need to play these 3 holes, 1 over par. These are a tough set of holes or something like that. So
I grew up playing football, basketball, and basketball was what I played in college. And this was back, I assume high school is still the same, 4 quarters. My dad was coaching me and he was a great player. And I, from an early age, my mindset was always I have 4 games in every game. Once that quarter's over with, it's a new game. So doing it in 3-hole increments, I've done it in 6-hole increments. And I haven't really, I like doing both. I think for the new course, I like doing it in 3-hole increments. Of course, I don't know. I'm a big fan of doing that. Big fan for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and I talk with players, competitive players all the time about trying to, you know, strategically plan out their round in a competition in a 3-hole sort of idea. We all know that you get off to a good start and your mind starts going to hole 17, which you know you got a tough tee shot on or whatever. And I think this is, if you sort of play the 3-hole round, maybe it helps even your mental state not jump ahead or go backwards too much because, hey, I've got 3 holes here.
Yeah, and if you bogey a hole that you're supposed to go even par on for that set, A, you know, shooting 1 over for your 3 holes isn't too bad. And maybe, I'm not saying you definitely don't get more aggressive and try to make a birdie to make up for it. But if one happens to come, cool, you know,
right,
good for you. So
I always enjoyed the mental reset.
Yeah.
Of whether you're playing good, because, you know, when you're playing good, you start to forecast.
Yes.
When you're playing bad, you start to forecast.
Yes.
So it's kind of like a reset and a snap to it kind of mentality.
Yeah. I sometimes also tell people that are like, how do I take this and play on the golf course? You know, because they'll go to the range to warm up and they'll play the first 3 holes really well. And then they'll play holes 4, 5, and 6 pretty good. And then, you know, it's been an hour since they practiced, so their feel starts to fade.
Yeah.
So I'll also tell people every 2 holes or every 3 holes, go off to the side and literally have a mini practice session for 2 minutes where you exaggerate your feels, you exaggerate the movements again. You're not hitting balls, you're just swinging at grass or something. But go have a mini range session off to the side and re-enhance those feels, if that's a word. But re-feel those things. You know, every 3 holes.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
Everyone's seen putting mats with lines and arcs on them. The problem is that when you're hitting a putt, you can't really watch exactly how your putter moved. Enter the Firefly from GloPro. The Firefly is a special laser and mat combination where the laser affixes to the shaft of your putter and traces a line that remains visible on the mat for about a minute. You can use it to check your path, stroke length, consistency, and more. All with an easy to set up, easy to use product that's unlike anything else we've seen. Visit GloPro Golf at GLOProGolf.com to get your very own Firefly today.
We also wrote, allow yourself a certain number of bad shots. You know, if you're a great player, it might be 3. If you're not a great player, it might be 12. And this goes to expectation management, because you can't, Ben Hogan said, you know, if he hits 2 or 3 great shots in a round that are exactly as he pictured, it was a great round. Let yourself have some bad shots. Good players hit bad shots. Rory McIlroy won the Masters and missed the green from 86 yards. I mean, good players hit some bad shots. If he said, oh my God, I stink, I need to go work on that, while he's standing there on 13 fairway with his hands on his head, he's not in the mood to play golf anymore at that point. He needs to say, oop, there was one of my, check that off. Okay, I still have a budget of 5 more of those or something. Hopefully he didn't have 5 more, but you know, you might.
Yeah, this is a really big point of contention for us. I was with, we shot a series with David Toms a few years back, and you know, while the cameras were being switched over, we were just chatting. And it was like, David, when you, I think he won 14 times. When you won those, out of those 14 weeks that you won, of those 4 rounds of golf, how many of those rounds did you feel like you really had your A game? You were really clicking. And he's like, I would say no more than 20% of the weeks he won. And he goes, and he said professional golf. I've since took liberty of editing it, and just good golf is managing your B and C game.
Right.
And, you know, we do golf schools every month. So we get to see players on the course. And it's like most golfers have zero right to be upset with the quality of shots we hit. I like to do with players in the schools of getting their shot bubbles for like their 8-iron. Okay. Your 8-iron dispersion, we did this last school, is 33 yards wide, 23 yards deep. Now you practice to improve that, but that's what you have to play with. If you're trying to hit it within 10 feet and you're disappointed that it went in the creek or the bunker or whatever, you've got no right to do that because that was inside your dispersion. So, but understanding that really takes a lot of pressure off what you're doing. And it's, you know, for guys, it's super hard to take that extra club to bump that dispersion past all the trouble because your buddy may be hitting an 8 and you're going to hit a 7 and then, you know, it always bites them.
Yeah. And I literally had a couple of students today, you know, one of our last episodes, we talked about getting better or getting worse in a lesson. Like, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And, you know, with all the technology that we do have in these studios, you know, my thing is players always get better. And they might move better. They might not necessarily hit it better today. They're probably going to, but they're definitely going to be better. And everyone just thinks better is hitting better shots. In you know, when you have a, you know, 30, 35 handicap player who can't put the club on the ground, mm-hmm. like they need to, they really are so hard on themselves. They're harder on themselves than Rory was missing the green from 80 yards, right? Because they want to hit a good shot so bad.
And you have to realize, and we say this so often, great swings are going to hit terrible shots. Terrible swings can hit great shots. So
that's right.
If you're practicing and you're only relying on that ball going somewhere towards your target, that's not practice.
That's right.
You give a decent athlete enough balls, they'll eventually do something, whether it's aim cockeyed or something, to get it going to the target, but that's not golf.
Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, but I know it could be really good because I hit that one shot. That one shot, that one good shot is the outlier. You know, it's the other 99 shots that they need to be focused on.
But our golf brains can wipe that out. We don't remember those 99. That one sticks in our head. We're that golfer.
That's the exception.
So we'll run through the last 3 pretty quickly here. Number one is, out of the last 3, is play tournaments. A lot of golfers don't play enough tournaments. And so then when they enter a tournament, and you could play a competition against your friends, you could do some other stuff, but enter some tournaments. Put your name next to a number on a scoreboard that other people can see, because you'll realize a few things. Number one, you're the only one that cares what you shot.
That's right.
Number two, the more you do it, the easier it becomes. So get out there and play some tournaments. You know, I mean, yes, you can be a golfer, but if you're listening to this podcast, if you're going to visit Mike at Athletic Motion Golf, you're spending some money, you're spending some time, you're spending some effort. You probably want to do something in golf a little bit more than just play every Saturday.
Yeah, you play golf if you don't compete, but if you really want to know what golf is, get out there and compete. You'll feel a whole new set of nerves and a whole new set of enjoyment from it too when you do succeed. I highly recommend it as well.
You'll learn a lot about yourself. Next one is par threes are hard. PGA Tour scoring average is almost always over par on par threes, except that they're hard. Just because it's a 170-yard shot, there are not many long irons that you hit. Most of them come on par threes.
Yeah, if you can get anywhere, goes back to those shot bubbles, anywhere near the middle of the green, you're going to improve your par three scoring, in my experience.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many people, you know, can we work on my four iron today? Yeah, absolutely. Let's work on it. And we'll start to hit some shots and I'll say, well, hey, last round you played, how many four irons did you hit? And they'll just sort of scratch their head. And maybe it's two, maybe for this person, right? It's like, well, if you only hit it twice, what's the odds that you're going to hit it good twice, right?
First question is, why are you carrying a four iron?
That's exactly right.
Hey, I still have a three, so. The muscle back three iron.
Oh, gosh.
I don't like how high hybrids go. They go high. Anyway, I don't hit it very often, but I don't need. Yeah. I could play golf with like 11 clubs, you know. I don't need a lot. The last one here is act like you've been there before. And what we mean by that is golfers don't often enough play the forward tees. If you're looking to break 80, do it from the red tees or whatever color the front tees are. Okay. Do it from there because then you will have broken 80 before. You might shoot 74. You might be like, yeah, but it was from the white tees. But then the next time you show up with needing a par on 18 from your normal set of tees, you can be like, hey, I've dealt with being only two over par before.
Yeah. This goes back to a lot of the mentality of the playing the game. Going low is not easy in putt-putt. It's not easy from the red tees. It's not easy from any tees. And I think a lot of golfers will avoid that uncomfortableness by moving back. Well, hey, I'm hitting four iron into every hole or whatever. Well, you're playing the wrong tees. Get up there where you can have enough wedges, chance to make a lot of birdies, and learn how to succeed and convert putts. Everybody can convert bogey putts. Get up there and convert those putts that you feel like you need to make. And it's a different game when you're trying to score low scores.
One weekend every year for my college team, I had them play the frontmost tees at the course that we played. And one year, one of my players averaged 72.3 for the year. We were just a Division III school, so that's pretty good. We played the forward tees that day. He shot 86.
Yeah.
Because he was finding places on the golf course that he didn't know existed.
That's right.
Just hitting driver everywhere and so on. It's like, dude, like you need some course management thoughts here. You know, if you can hit 7-iron and be where your driver normally goes, but in the middle of every fairway, that might not be a bad idea for you the next time you try this.
So that's usually the difference between a girl's team and a boy's team, right? The guys are thinking it's drive every green time.
Yep.
And they wind up in all sorts of trouble.
Yeah. Yep. He found some places he didn't know existed. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
That'll do it for this episode. Mike, people can find you where?
AthleticMotionGolf.com, all over the socials. And we're trying to be everywhere.
Yeah, just search for it. You'll find Mike and Sean and Nick and others.
That's right. Once again, Mike, thanks so much for taking some time doing this episode. Once again, to everybody out there, go follow AMG. Hit the subscribe button on the Spin Access podcast. We'll see you next time.
Awesome.
All right. Take care.